All right, thanks everyone. Good morning again. We're now going to open our regular board meeting. Agenda program has previously been tendered to each of you. And we'll start the meeting with Dr. Ransdell making a special recognition.
So, Regent Zelke has been on the board for soon to be 12 years.
Long years.
Having served two terms, which is the statutory limit on service. And while we do have a budget approval meeting, and while you are still a regent until your replacement is appointed by the governor, it would be appropriate in the last regularly scheduled meeting of your 12-year term to come forward and accept this on behalf of the board and the university. And we are grateful for your leadership and your intellect and what you brought to discussions. And you've been a loyal and terrific regent, and we are grateful for your service. So thank you for 12 years of leadership.
I would appreciate that. It means a lot to me. I've had a good time here, and since I've been a regent here, I've had a triple bypass. I vividly recall making the motion to go to football, A1, and when we had a meeting in Glasgow, I had to cut off the faculty professor. There was a promotion, if you all remember that.
Yes.
Schooled then after I came back to the meeting. And I also remember changing the employment contract. I had an arbitration clause that I thought was wrong, and I kept voting and voting and voting, and finally won. Persistence paid off. But you all been a great group to work with. I do plan now, if you need me in June, I'll be here.
Great.
Thank you. I've enjoyed my time here, and it's a great institution, and all the regents, regardless of who appointed the regents, once they get here, they put the university ahead of everything.
I also want to make sure I got my notes correct here. Only one time that I'm aware of that a student body president has been elected two terms in a row, Katie Dawson, between 2005 and 2008 to serve as our student regent President of the Student Government Association, and so J. Todd Ritchie has now achieved that distinguished honor of being reelected for a second term as student body president and therefore student regent. And so in my 19 years as president, you're one of the second one that I'll have the opportunity to serve two consecutive terms with. So congratulations, J. Todd Ritchie, on your reelection. Oh, yeah. Let's get another pen.
We'll call the roll. Secretary Harris.
Dr. Bale.
Here.
Dr. Bowles.
Here.
Dr. Lindsay.
Here.
Here.
Mr. Johnson.
Here.
Mr. Porter.
Here.
Mr. Ray.
Here.
Mr.
Ray. Here.
Dr.
Here.
Here.
Quorum being announced, we're now official to conduct our board meeting today. Previously, you had submitted January 29th quarterly meeting minutes and our special call meeting minutes of February 12th, 2016. Any additions or corrections to those minutes?
I move their approval.
Motion by Regent Johnson for approval.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Bale. Any questions or discussions? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
As you know, before we move into our various committees, we use the consent agenda format. The committees of the board met on March 25th, and this morning to discuss each item on their respective agendas, and recommend submitting the agenda items to the board for action. So with that being said, we'll turn to our first committee of the morning, Academic Affairs, Regent Bell.
Mr. Chairman, we have six action items on our consent agenda that were presented at our meeting March 25th. Any discussion concerning any of these six items? Not. Ask for a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Dr. Birch, second for Mr. Ritchie. Not all those in favor say aye.
I'd like to make one comment first. The approval of the Brewing and Distilling Arts and Sciences, it got my attention. I represent the General Counsel of the Louisville and Jefferson County Visitors and Convention Bureau. And when I read the description here, it talked about the Bourbon Trail, which we created in Louisville. And there are distilleries being put up and down Main Street. And it's becoming one of the main tourist attractions of the entire Commonwealth. And so this will allow people to learn the history and what happened during Prohibition, which actually shut down a lot of the small distilleries in the Commonwealth, even though we got a lot of counties that are dry. For Louisville's purposes, it was a big deal. Now they're all coming back, and they're bringing tons and tons of tourism dollars to the Commonwealth. This is a fantastic program. And I just want to salute the university administration for creating something like this.
It is a niche, and we want it to be a global destination program as we move to actual degrees, minor, major, perhaps master's in the future. And we'll have lunch at the brewery that's now been built in our Center for Research and Development by Altec. And so we want to provide credentialed professionals that are lacking when distillers and brewers now seek employees. We want to provide learned individuals with credentials as opposed to a degree in chemistry, a degree in agriculture, or whatever the case might be. Dr. McMichael, Andrew McMichael's sitting back over here. He's been one of the primary architects of this program, and has been both a passion and a scientific endeavor on his part, a scholarly endeavor on his part over the last several years. Andrew, any thoughts to share?
Yeah, I want to thank you for making those comments, and we'll go down and tour the brewery later, but just to address it, when we started doing this about a year ago, we went around and interviewed brewers and distillers, and just all we asked them was, what would you like to see on a transcript from the lesson in order to hire them? What do you wish you had known before you got into this business? And that's how we started this program. And so what we're doing is responding to a multi-billion dollar industry in the Commonwealth, and creating a program that our students can find ready to perform.
Oh, you're right. That's what I like about it so much. It's not only is it academic, it's vocational. It has both aspects to it. I mean, you got buildings going up galore. If everyone has the time to go to Louisville, there's Angel's Envy building going up, and Brown Foreman has things going up on Whiskey Row, it's called. So this is a big deal.
Well, and I particularly appreciate your comments, too, because we've had some questions about why is a brewing and distilling program housed both in a College of Science and Engineering and in a College of Arts and Letters? And it's precisely because we're looking at that broader context for this industry.
College of Business. All three are engaged in this curriculum.
Good.
Very good. Thank you for that elaboration. Very good. Any other comments? Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Our consent agenda has passed. I would now like to ask Provost Lee to make some comments, informational items on our pathway program.
Well, and I believe some discussion came up at the committee meetings on March the 25th about pathways, and I was asked to provide the board with an update on where pathways kind of is right now, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to do that. Like many other universities across the country in recent years, WKU is making more of an effort to recruit more international students, and our international applicants essentially fall into kind of three different sections or three different kinds of categories. One is folks who are directly admissible to our undergraduate or graduate programs. There's another group, folks who fall just a little bit short of our admissions criteria, but probably have the potential with some support to be successful in those programs. And a third group is folks whose English skills are simply not where they need to be successful at an American university. And those folks are admitted to ESLI, which is an operation that we've had on this campus. It's a separate business that prepares students in terms of their English language skills. And that's been a part of this campus probably for more than 20 years. So potentially graduate students and undergraduate students who fall into that middle category, who have fairly decent English skills or other skills but are not quite at our admissions criteria, those folks can enter the pathways. For several years, Navitas operated the pathways for us, but that connection ended in January of 2016, and the university now has full responsibility for operating pathways. It's important to notice that Pathways operates in a somewhat different way at the graduate level and at the undergraduate level. At the graduate level, students seeking admission to the university must be admitted by the university and by the program that they intend to gain admission to. That's not necessarily the case at the undergraduate level, but at the undergraduate level, there's this kind of dual admission into the institution and also into the specific program that they want to pursue. And as a consequence, individual faculty members play a much larger role in admissions decisions at the graduate level than they really do at the undergraduate level. Over the last few months, the interim dean of graduate studies, Eric Reed, has worked very extensively with some targeted programs at the graduate level, because these students tend to come into about five or six or seven programs, and he has worked with these folks to develop with these programs to develop a conditional admissions process for students who fall into this kind of pathways kind of dimension. We have one that's final with organizational leadership. We're pretty well along with one in computer science. We're also working with one in engineering technology management. Some others are in process. But it's putting into writing, putting on paper what these criteria might be for students to be admitted on a pathways, on our conditional admission for our graduate programs. And specifically, those students would be taking a course that developed their writing skills, a course that developed their literacy skills, which is essentially reading for comprehension and some related study skills, and they would also take a course in the program. So as a consequence, these students are building skills that will help them be successful at an American university and also kind of getting them into the door of their program and giving faculty members in that program a better sense of how well prepared they are. Assuming satisfactory performance in these courses, then these students would be fully admitted to the degree program that they're seeking. This approach involves faculty in the programs and admissions decisions from the very beginning and provides coursework that's going to be helpful to them in terms of being successful. In a related dimension with this, we are also involving faculty much more directly in international recruitment process, the recruitment of international students, and we have faculty members who will be traveling later this year to India and to China as part of recruitment efforts, because we really believe that that faculty members, particularly given the special nature of graduate admissions, need to be involved in this process very early on. I think it's also valuable for faculty members to have some sense of how the international recruitment process works. Eric is an extraordinarily valuable faculty member who willingly stepped in to be interim graduate dean on short notice, and I decided he was doing such a great job with this, I've also asked him to serve as academic coordinator for the Pathways program at the undergraduate level, and he is working with department heads and faculty as well as international enrollment management to address the various academic issues as we recruit, admit, prepare Pathways students for our bachelor's programs. These folks are primarily going to take two semesters worth of courses, about 24 hours worth of courses, and they will be chosen primarily, not exclusively, but primarily from the Colonnade curriculum, so that these students at the end of their first year here will have had a good preparation to be successful in settings beyond the Pathways programs. As part of this transitional period with Pathways, we're trying to make sure that we have more things in writing than we've probably had in the past. I've already mentioned the conditional admissions agreement, but we are also working on a memorandum of understanding that specifically lays out the responsibility that each of various offices has in terms of recruiting, admitting, and bringing students through the pathways. We're developing written guidelines for our international recruitment events. These are things that we expect to see as we go to international recruitment fairs or we schedule our own events, but we're developing written guidelines in conjunction with this, and we're also developing guidelines for advertising that's done in conjunction with these international recruitment efforts. So during this transitional period, Dean Reed is going to continue to coordinate this program in academic affairs. He's meeting regularly with folks in enrollment management to make sure we've got a good, clear lines of communication there. As I say, more things are in writing. There's more faculty involvement. And academic affairs is very much in charge of what's happening with these courses, what's happening with this program overall, and we are certainly responsible for the quality of the program that we are delivering. And in conjunction with this, we are also appointing a faculty advisory committee to work with Eric on this process. At present, we are expecting a fairly small kind of Pathways enrollment for next fall. We are anticipating about 20 graduate students spread over some different programs, and we are right now anticipating about 15 undergraduate students in the undergraduate Pathways piece. We have not set the curriculum yet for these, particularly at the undergraduate level, because those students will not begin to arrive until probably July and into early August. And we're going to take a look at what their academic interests are. We're going to take a look at what some of their strengths and weaknesses are, and we will put together a curriculum that addresses those probably in late July or early August. We won't have any staffing issues with these because these are basic Colonnade classes, and staffing them is not a particular problem. And we will also have in place academic support for these students if they need help with various things such as note-taking or understanding expectations about documentation of reports, that sort of thing. So we are in a kind of transition phase. We're expecting a small enrollment in the fall, but I think we're in a very good place in terms of what's happening in academic affairs and beyond academic affairs in collaboration with other related programs to make sure that the Pathways serves these students the way that we certainly would want it to. That's a kind of quick update. I'm happy to elaborate as you all might be interested or respond to any questions that you all might have.
So thank you for all of that. That was very elaborate. Does this program finance tutors for students in need of wanting to learn a specific?
It has the potential to do that. This revenue is earmarked, and we can draw on that. At this point, given the size of the program, we have not moved to employ full-time tutors. What we would probably do at this point is to draw on existing university resources to provide special kinds of training. If, for example, we do see that these students have specific issues with note-taking, we might not hire somebody full-time to do that, but there are folks on this campus who can provide that expertise. And at least at this point, given the size of the program, we would probably draw on existing resources to do that. But yes, identifying issues in their preparation, identifying things that they need to make sure that they're successful going forward, that's definitely part of what we're going to be doing here.
Just very briefly, I spoke to a group of Bengali students with the Bangladesh Student Association. Many of them were computer science majors, and they informed me that they had to switch their major because they said there wasn't a single computer science tutor that could help them with their language skill and able to make sure that they were successful here, and so they just switched their major. That was the only option they had because they did not have the resource. That's not a criticism of the Pathways program at all. It was just a concern from the students to see if we can address that in the future.
Well, and you certainly point to one of the challenges with an increasingly internationalized student body. It's sometimes hard to know where these students will be coming from, what their interests might be, what kind of support they might need in order to be successful. So there is a sense in which we have to be very nimble in providing services to students, sometimes a bit on the fly, but certainly we have to be able to respond to issues as they come along. And I'll do some follow-up on that and see what might be possible.
Thank you so much.
Any other comments?
Since I raised the question, first of all, thanks, David, for the thorough explanation and for making it clear on the different categories. Just a couple of question comments. One of the things I'm really, really happy to hear you say is that we're going to look at some ways of providing academic support for international students. I don't think we're unlike most universities with graduate programs, but we typically don't have much identifiable academic support that is beyond what a department or a program area might do. A clarification, maybe. The Pathways program that we had for some time was designed to do two things. It was designed to recruit additional international students, which would matriculate through our program, and it was designed to be handsomely revenue generating. As you're describing the direction we're going, are we going to look at students coming in and decide whether they are directly admissible or need Pathways or need ESLI, or are we going to intentionally recruit for students who would be Pathway students? That's what we were doing
previously.
Are we going to intentionally recruit for them, or is this going to be a program that is a support program for those who need it?
Well, and in some ways, I think that's kind of the $64,000 question. What is our direction in terms of international student recruitment? My preference would be that we recruit students who are fully admissible, and it's not necessarily for us to provide some fairly expensive kinds of, mm-hmm. potentially fairly expensive kind of support for them. At the same time, there probably is a substantial cohort of students out there in various countries around the world who have the potential to be successful here but are not quite directly admissible at this point. In the past, with Navitas, we've had a group that was targeted to do that, and they had a financial incentive to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where we go going forward, I have to quite frankly say I'm still in the process of figuring out. I suspect, though, that we are going to continue to have some number of students in this particular group, and I suspect it will grow. Whether it will be as large as it might have been at one time, I'm not sure, but I think it is going to be a fairly substantial part of our international student recruitment going forward.
And as we go forward, and you basically have touched on that in your statement, I think we need to take a really close look at the financial model for it, because we would now probably be more engaged with agent contracts.
That's true.
To get these students and I think you need to be very, very careful about those agent contracts and who we work with. And secondly, I think the scholarshiping of students, I mean, I think as the financial model has to figure in the financing costs for scholarship, the agent costs, yes, all of the other costs. And personally, I think we ought to be really cautious about making that a targeted population for recruiting large numbers if we find that it doesn't do much more than break even.
Yes.
Because we've got it takes a lot of time, and we've got an awful lot of things that need to be done for the students that we have. So I would really look very closely at that so that we have a good sense of it. The other thing is that I'm pleased that you're going to continue a faculty advisory committee.
Yes.
And I did go talk with David and appreciate both David and President's response on this. And he has assured that by the time we get these students in, this will be under the oversight of academic affairs. It's an academic program. Correct?
There is.
Or maybe I should be asking the wrong person. Okay. Okay. I think that's really important. This is an academic program.
It's an academic program, and I'm the chief academic officer, and I'm responsible for it. Absolutely.
Okay. That's helpful. So thank you very much.
Well, let me wrap this up by saying anything we can do to strengthen this, which you clearly are doing, is got to be a good thing for the university. In the larger context of things as we conduct our presidential search, part of that will be an institutional review where some of these questions and thoughts can be aired as we move forward. But certainly having a good international student population is a plus. Economically, we hope and want it to be, but for what it does for diversity on the campus.
Yes.
So I think what you are doing and done here is very well thought out and very good. In capable hands.
I have a whole lot of confidence in Dean Reed.
Yes. Anyone else have any other thoughts or comments? All right, Mr.
Wear your hand there, just so everybody knows who you're going to be.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes the business of the Academic Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. We'll now move to Executive Committee.